The last day of the Zman, and it's wonderful to be in Beis Medrash that Baruch Hashem has a beautiful Olam, and you are our Pe'er. If you're here on the last day of the Zman, then that means that you care about yeshiva, it means that you love learning, and it means that you have a tremendous chelek of this Beis Medrash. So I try to give a closer shmuz right before the end of the Zman, and it's supposed to be a message that carries us into the summer. Some of us are not coming back after the summer, so hopefully it'll last you beyond the summer. But it's primarily addressing issues that we have to focus on, Mirtz Hashem, in this very long summer ahead. And I'm not just talking to you, I'm talking to myself as well. It's a difficult period of time when you don't have a miskeret of a yeshiva and you're basically lacking that scaffolding, that rubric that keeps you in check and that keeps everything nice and neat. And even then, even during the year, it's challenging. But especially in the summer, it's a very big nisayon, as we know, and this is hopefully going to address some of that for us. Parshas Nasai, I didn't give a shmuz that parsha. I prepared a shmuz, and unfortunately somebody in my family had to be taken to the hospital, so I wasn't able to be here. But I still have the shmuz. And it's a shmuz that is very befitting, I think, for this time of year, so I'm going to give it. It's hard for me to keep a shmuz. You know, there's a lot of nicer. You can't like keep things over. Sometimes you have to say things. When I think I had a daughter that was born on a Thursday evening, late at night, and I came and I gave a shmuz that Friday morning in yeshiva, and I remember starting the shmuz and I said that a shmuz like a baby must be delivered. Yeah, once you have it, you have to deliver it. So I didn't get it. I have it in my pocket. This shmuz in Parshas Nasai since Nasai a couple of weeks ago. And I want to share it with you today. So at the end of Parshas Nasai, there is a repetitive parsha. I once recently bumped into a boy who was bar mitzvah. I asked him, what's your parsha? He said, I have the longest parsha, but it's the easiest parsha. I said, what parsha? He says, Nasai. Half of it is just repeating the same paragraph over and over. It sounds like, oh, wow, you have the longest parsha. But really, it's quite easy to lane. Once you get through the first half, you're good, because it's just sort of, you just change the name of the Nasi, and it's the exact same formula. Every single day, the Nasi Shabbi Yisrael, these great men, these great leaders, contributed the same exact thing to the Chanukah HaMizbeach, to inaugurate the brand new Mizbeach in the Mishkan. This is what they brought. And this is the same thing every single day. So we have Karbonai Karas Kesef Achas, one silver bowl, Shleishu Mei Mishkala. It weighed 130 shekels. And then he also brought Mizrak Echad Kesef, Shivim Shekel B'Shekel HaKadosh. One basin of silver, 70 shekels in the sacred shekel. And then there was fine flour that was brought with incense, and a young bull, and a ram, and a sheep. And that was basically the carbon that every Nasi brought every single day of the Chanukah HaMizbeach. And of course, this is a parsha that we lay in on Chanukah, and so we're familiar with the parsha very, very well. If you look in Rashi gives, I think he goes a little bit out of the way he normally does things. And he starts giving us a lot of gematrias. He starts giving us a lot of minyan isyas. So he says, for example, karas kesef, when it says that there's one silver bowl, minyan isyas begematria tuf kuf lamed, the gematria of karas kesef is 930, keneged shneisav shel adam arishen. This is how many years Adam Rishon lived. He lived 930 years. And so we bring Karas Kesef. Some reason there is an allusion to the years of Adam. Adam really, of course, was supposed to live 1,000 years. but he dedicated 70 of those 1,000 years to David HaMelech, so he only had 930 years to live, and that is symbolized by Karas Kesef. How much did they weigh, these Karas Kesef? Shleshim Umeya Mishkala, 130 was its weight. And Rashi says, Al Shem Shekeshehem Mitoldes L'kiyam Ha'aylam Ben Meya V'lamid Shanahaya Shenemra Ve'echi Adam Shleshim U'mashana Ve'el B'dmusa Kitzalmai, that when Adam Arishain gave birth, he was 130 years old. He lived 130 years, and then he had a child. This was obviously besides for Cain and Hevel that were born in the same day that he was born, but after that happened, there was 130 years that passed until he had the next child. And so that's 130. Mizrak Echad Kesef, a sprinkling basin. Begematria Tuf Kuf Chaf. That's 520 begematria. Mizrak Echad Kesef. Al Shem Nayach, Shehemid Taldais, Ben Tuf Kuf Shana. He had children when he was 500 years old. The Al Shem Esrim Shanish Nigzer Gezeris Mabel. And where's the 20? There was 20 years when the Gezeres HaMabel was enacted, was commanded, was told, Kaidim told Esav, and that was before it was 20 years before he had children, Kamesha Pirashti, Vayim Yamav Meyav Esrim Shana. Lefichach Nema Mizrak Echa Kesav, Lenema Mizrak Kesav Echad, fine. So we see that for some reason, Rashi is telling us that these psukim, these important psukim that need to be repeated over and over again, speaking about the Chanukas HaMizbeach, the inauguration of the Mizbeach, involves gematrias of minyanim of the years and the lives of Adam and Nayach, which is very strange. Why in the world are we going back that far, Adam and Nayach? Why is the Torah embedding this mysterious number representing their lives when they gave birth and everything about them in the Chanukas HaMizbeach? Why is that important? Whenever you see a Rashi like this, and you see like they're making a minion of a gematria by somebody's name, obviously there's a message here. It's not just random, okay, so Adam lived this many years, and therefore the basin is that, and Nayach. What's the significance? What's the significance of Adam and Nayach to the Mizbeach? And I think that the answer to this question is that Adam and Nayach were very, very significant players in the context of a Mizbeach. If you look in the Rambam, in Hilchas Beis HaBechira, Perek Beis Halacha Beis, the Rambam has the Halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, which he terms Hilchas Beis HaBechira. Beis HaBechira means the house that was chosen. The house that was chosen is the Makam HaMikdash, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to be Mashra Shechina. It's called the Beis HaBechira. And in that set of halachas, this is what he writes in Perek Beis, Halacha Beis. He's speaking about the Mizbeach. U'misayras Biad HaKal. And we have a Misayra, Biad HaKal. Everybody knows this Misayra, says the Rambam. Shehamakim Shebana by David Ushleim HaMizbeach Begayrin Arvana, the place that David planned, he was the architect of the Beis HaMikdash. He didn't get to see the actual Beis HaMikdash built, but he planned it out. He bought it from Arvana, and then he gave it over to Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech actually built the Beis HaMikdash. That place of the Makom HaMikdash, and specifically the place that the Mizbeach was established, in the center of the Makom HaMishkan, the Makom HaMikdash. Hu HaMakom, this is a very great historical location. This isn't a random location. This place, this spot on which the Mizbeach was built, Hu HaMakom Shebana by Avraham HaMizbeach Vakad Olav Yitzchak. You want to know where Akedas Yitzchak took place? Akedas Yitzchak, where Avraham Avinu built the Mizbeach and was willing to sacrifice his son, his beloved son, his only son, Yitzchak, on the Akedah. It was on that very makom, on that spot. That's where David HaMelech put the Mizbeach. But we could go back further in history than Akedas Yitzchak, says the Rambam. V'u ha'makom shebana b'nayach, kishe yotzim in ha'teva. The Torah tells us that after Noach left the Teva, he built a Mizbeach. It's interesting. He didn't land in Yerushalayim. He landed in Turkey, in Ararat. But he got from Turkey all the way to Yerushalayim, and that's the place that he built the Mizbeach to be makir of a karban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in gratitude for being saved from the Mabul. But it goes back even more. V'hu HaMizbeach Shikrav Alav Kayin VeHevel. This was the place that Kayin and Hevel were makriv a karban. U'bay Hikrav Adam HaRishayin. And Adam HaRishayin also was makriv a karban. Kishen Nivra. When was Adam HaRishayin makriv a karban? As soon as he was born. He wasn't born a little baby. He was born fully created, fully mature. He had full das. And as soon as he was born, as soon as he was created, he built a Mizbeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'misham Nivra, not only did he build it on that spot, but he was created from that spot. The dirt of the Makim HaMizbeach was actually the dirt that Adam HaRishon was created from. Adam HaRishon was Nivra Min HaAfar. Where did that offer come from? That offer, says the Rambam, Rashi brings a different medrash that says that he was Tzavar, he took offer from all the places in the world. Every single continent on the world had a little bit of Adam HaRishon composition in it, because that way he'd be able to be buried. Man could be buried anywhere in the world, because part of his decomposition includes having some of the local dirt in you. And so he had that, but there was also the Rambam, and Rashi also brings that as the Makim HaMizbeach. The Makim HaMizbeach, and maybe I think some of the Mefarshim try to put these two together, and they say that the body was created from all over the world, but the Reish really came from the Makim HaMizbeach. So he was Nivra from that offer of the Mizbeach. Amru Chachamim Adam Makim Kaparasei Nivra. From the place of his atonement, that's where Adam was created. So I believe that when we're talking about the first Mizbeach that we're building, this is predating David and Shlomo's Mizbeach. This is the first Mizbeach that was being built by Klal Yisrael in the Mishkan, albeit it's not in the Beis HaBechira, but we have to allude, it would be not right to not allude at this moment in time when you're being mechanech the Mizbeach, you're inaugurating the Mizbeach, you have to make mention to all of the predecessors of who inaugurated the Mizbeach in world history. The Mizbeach on the Makim HaMikdash, Adam HaRishon, as soon as he was born, started this concept of offering a carbon to the Rabbeinu Shalom. And then his sons, and that's why the ability that he had to procreate was also alluded here. And then Noach and his family, all of that we are also being Merames. Adam and Noach, the gematrias, are spelled out, are enumerated in this parsha, because the parsha of the Mizbeach is Adam and Noach, and beyond. And from Noach it went to Avraham and Yitzchak, and then it went to David and Shlomo, and beyond and beyond. But it starts with Adam. It starts with Noach. And therefore, we allude in the Karis Kesef and the Mizrake Kesef, all of this has to have the allusions of Adam and Noach. It's not random. These are the people in history that showed how a person must approach the Rabbeinu Shlomo. What is that approach? That approach is an approach of sacrificing oneself to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Now, Baruch Hashem, we don't believe in human sacrifice. That's a very paganistic ritual that obviously the Torah says that's totally asur. But in a sense, we do. Because the Ramban says that the kavonis that a person has to have when he's being makir of that carbon on the Mizbeach is that really I should be offered as a sacrifice on the altar. I did Averis, I deserve to die, I deserve to give myself over to the Rabbeinu Shalom. But lucky for me, here's the animal. The head of the animal is instead of my head, the heart of the animal is instead of my heart, the feet of the animal, the arms, everything is for me, but I'm being makir of myself on the Mizbeach through the animal. I saw one from the Granat, Rabbi Naftali Trapp, who was the Rashiva and the Chavetz Chaim's Yeshiva in Radin. He once said that when Yitzchak Avinu was going to the Akedah, so it says that he was very happy. And then after Avram Avinu told him that he was the Seh, he was still happy. Nothing changed. When he thought it was the carbon, he was happy. And after he was told that he was the carbon, or he understood that, he was still happy. Vayelchu shneim yachtav, they were still going happily together to the Mizbeach. So the Granat says, you know what's the pshat? Because Yitzchak was having the kavana of the Ramban originally. It's not that I'm bringing a carbon, I'm bringing myself. A carbon really is bringing yourself on the Mizbeach. You're doing it, you lucked out because you could do it vicariously through bringing a carbon. But in your brain, you have to imagine that you yourself are going on the Mizbeach. So when Yitzchak Avinu actually was told that, no, you're the carbon, you don't have an animal, you're the carbon, it made really no difference to him because he had that kavana the whole time. And this is the yisayid that we learn from Adam and we learn from Noach, that we have to be able to give up our lives to the Rabbeinu Shalom. We have to sacrifice a lot to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Adam knew that from day one, that I'm not here for myself, but I'm here to give up everything to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Every day I have to sacrifice myself to the Rabbeinu Shalom. That's the site of the Mizbeach. And this is something that happened from the beginning of time and throughout. There was an unbroken chain of sacrifice, of self-sacrifice for the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's not about me. I'm willing to give everything up to be Meiser Nefesh in order to serve the Rabbeinu Shalom. That is our kavana in life. That's who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be Jews that give up our lives. We're willing to do anything and everything for the Rabbeinu Shalom. And this is the Messiah of our Abbas. And this is what has happened from time immemorial to Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has had wonderful periods of history, and there have been terrible periods of history. But throughout it all, Klal Yisrael were literally able and willing, by and large, to give up everything on the Mizbeach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because this is our Messiah. Whether it was in the Churban Bayis Rishain, or as the Churban Bayis Sheni, the millions of Yidden that died during that period, and with terrible deaths, with terrible tragedy, with terrible famine, being ravaged, that they did it al Kiddush Hashem, they died al Kiddush Hashem, they self-sacrificed for the Rabbeinu Shalom. During the Spanish Inquisition, we were just talking about the golden age of Spain. You know, Spain had a wonderful period. It was ups and downs. It wasn't perfection. Obviously, there were always persecutions and always problems, but it was a wonderful period of time. And this was the time of the Rishonim, the great Rishonim that lived in Spain and that accomplished so much for Klal Yisrael. But, of course, it came to a crashing end during the period of the Inquisition, during the period of the expulsion in 1492. And those Yidden, at the end of that Kufa, that they were so... They were doing so well, and they were so affluent, and they were so productive, and they were great for society, and they were living like golden era, like we're living here in America. But when the time came, they were willing to be Meiser Nefesh, and the people, that many people gave up their lives at the stake because they did not want to convert to Catholicism. And there were many people that did not, and they went into hiding, or they did other etzes. But it's very interesting. The Chassid Yaivitz writes, he was there at the time, and he writes a testimony about what was going on. He said the people, we know that they were very into philosophy in Spain in that period of time. A lot of the great philosophers were really advancing during that period. And philosophy is something that, you know, you can't say it's bad because many of the Rishonim were great philosophers, but philosophy, if it's used in the wrong way, it's a very dangerous tool. Because what it does is it makes you think too much and you become such a deep thinker and you think about all of the mysteries of the world that you begin to think that, or you begin to see certain discrepancies and you read enough things and you get confused. He says the people that were dabbling in philosophy or that were immersed in philosophy during the Spanish Inquisition, generally speaking, he said, they punted. They did not give up their lives on Kiddush Hashem. They were not willing to put themselves on the Mizbeach. It was the simple Jews, it was the people with Emunah Pshuta. We don't know from any Chachmas, we don't know from any this and that and maybes. We just know there's a Rebbein Hashem in the world and we're supposed to now give up our lives on Kiddush Hashem. That's what we know and that's what we're going to do. Those are the people that were Meisei Nefesh. It wasn't the deep thinkers. The philosophers very often are able to philosophize themselves out of these very difficult times. But it's the people that have emunah pshuta, the simple faith in the Rebbein Hashem, without knowing anything extra. And this is the way our Messiah is, that, you know, just believe in the Rebbein Hashem. Keep it simple. Keep the faith as simple as possible. Don't try to outsmart anybody. Because when you start outsmarting other people, you start outsmarting yourself, and you end up in a big mess. The less that you can expose yourself to in terms of other ideologies and other ways of looking at things and this way and that way, and the internet is full of these things. But Rabim Chalolam Hipila, I'm telling you this from many experiences with Talmidim that dabble on the internet or beyond with these types of websites and these types of blogs and this and that, it's the beginning of the end. Because they can never open up a Chumash normally, they can never look at a Ramban normally, they can never look at a Musa. So everything is, they became so smart that they outsmarted themselves. And we go through the rest of history. And of course, the Holocaust that was, you know, ravaged Klal Yisrael, 6 million Kedoshim. It's a number that's impossible to wrap our brain around. I don't know if you ever saw. I was in the Old City a couple of years ago, and I saw in the Sfarim store there was a book, and it was, I forgot what it was called, but it was basically, the whole book was a very, very small font, a very thick book, small font, and it just said the word Jew 6 million times. Said the word Jew. It was a thick book, just to give you some understanding of how many Jews it was that were killed. 6 million just became like a number. But it's 6 million people that put on tefillin, that daven, that were shomer Torah mitzvahs, that had mishpachas, or that was a child, that was in chadarim, that was in Beis Yaakov. 6 million people. If you had $6 million, you'd be a pretty wealthy man. 6 million people, human beings, achenu, B'nai Yisrael, it's an amazing number. They died al Kiddush Hashem. We call them the 6 million Kedoshim because they understood this concept that there's a Mesira B'yodeinu Me'aveisenu, that there's a Mizbeach, and there's a Mizbeach for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and sometimes we're expected to put ourselves on that Mizbeach for the Rebbein Hashem. This is sometimes what the Rebbein Hashem expects for us to do. Rav Shach once said that he would have given all of his life's achievements, and he had a lot of achievements in life. Rav Shach was the Gadol Hadar. Rav Shach wrote the Aviezer. Rav Shach was Rosh Yeshiva Panovich. Rav Shach, there are Svarim, big fat Svarim, just full of stories about him, and the chesed, and the tzidkus that he had, and the brilliance, the pikchus, and what he did for Klal Yisrael. He said, I would give it all up in exchange for having the precious moments of richness and pleasure of those who stood outside a gas chamber waiting to be killed when they suddenly remembered that the day was Simchas Torah. And they said one to another, we might not have a safer Torah to dance with, but we do have the Bari Olamim, the Rebbein Hashem is with us now. And let's make a Rekida with the Rebbein Hashem. And that's what they did. Moments before they were killed, they danced with joy at the precious gift of Torah that Hashem had given them. And Rav Shach says that those moments, he wasn't there, but he heard about this. And he says, if I could only have been zeicha to be there at that time when they were giving up their lives with happiness, with simcha, with ashreinu matayv chalkeinu, he says, all of my life's achievements I would have given up just for that moment of richness, that pleasure of being able, it's a schus to be makar. When we think about being makar of ourselves on the mizbeach, we think that's a horrible thing. I don't want to do that. I want to live. And of course, we all want to live. But there's a richness to it. There's an ability to say, this is really what I want to do. I want to give everything to the Rabbeinu Shalom. And when we don't daven for that, but if the time calls for it, Jews have always been able to do it. It's a very hard thing for us to understand, and it's frightening maybe, but if you're in that moment and that ability to live through it, this is what Rav Shach says, it would be an amazing, amazing moment to savor and to appreciate and to enjoy. Imam Ruttenberg, by the way, has a famous tshuva, and he says that people that die al kiddush Hashem, they don't feel the torture that they're being put through. Sometimes they, you know, there were terrible tortures that were involved, being burned at the stake. You can imagine that wasn't, but he says if you're dying al kiddush Hashem, he says you don't feel anything. This is a moment that Klal Yisrael doesn't necessarily yearn for, but when it happens, it's exactly what is expected of them at that time. When we come to America, and this is the last galus, we have a Messiah from the Vilna Gaon through Chaim Volozhiner that there's 10 stancias, he said. This galus of Galus Edom that we're in right now has 10 stations. And the last station, the letzte stancia, is the station of America. America, we have a Kabbalah that this is the last stop of Mashiach. Before Mashiach comes, this is the last stop. We had all the other stops on the train, and this is the last stop. And this is, that Kabbalah, by the way, was what motivated Aaron Cutler to make the decision to come to America over Eretz Yisrael. When he was leaving war-torn Europe, he had a choice to make. Should I move to Eretz Yisrael? Or should I move to America? Eretz Yisrael, he had more reason to go to Eretz Yisrael because Eretz Yisrael is where his wife's parents lived. Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, he had a yeshiva. He was going to give the whole yeshiva to Aaron Cutler. He had many reasons to go to Eretz Yisrael. Or he can go to America. America at the time was a complete midbar. But knowing this Messiah from Aaron Cutler, that this is where Tyre is moving to, so he sort of saw the trend. He saw that this is the direction, this is where he needs to be. And look what he did here. Look at what the mapecha that Aaron Cutler made. One man. You wonder, like, what could I do? I'm just one guy. You see that Aaron Cutler, what one man, obviously, you know, very few people ever were Aaron Cutler, not comparing us to him, but what one man did, you see, like, you know, he started a yeshiva in Lakewood, and it grew. It started with a handful of talmidim, and then it grew to, a couple of hundred. By the time he was nifter, I don't know how many there were. I don't think there were more than a few hundred. Reb Schneer took over, and he created it, you know, into the thousands. And now, you know, you have an asifa, you have an Adiri Atayra convention in a Philadelphia sports arena that houses 25,000 people, most of them from Lakewood. Amazing. Amazing what one man has done. And besides for all the kailim all over the world that Lakewood sends to and founds, the Ashbab, one man. But Rav Aaron Cutler came to America because he understood that this is where he has to be and this is where the next and the last stop of Torah is. And in America, we find that there was a new type of Mesiras Nefesh that suddenly was being formed. It wasn't a Mesiras Nefesh, Baruch Hashem, of being burnt on any stakes. There was never major, you know, sometimes there have been Jews killed and minor pogroms in America, but and people have been definitely killed al Kiddush Hashem, individuals. But the Rabbim, Baruch Hashem, we've had it very good here, Bli Ayin Hara. But there's always been tremendous Mesiras Nefesh in America, but in a different way. It wasn't a Mesiras Nefesh of, can I live, but how will I live? Will I be able to live my life as a Jew, as a Shomer Torah Mitzvah, in spite of all of the challenges? And today, we're basically not challenged like we used to be. Today you have all types of laws on the books protecting your religious liberties. And if somebody, you know, wants to leave work early because he's Sabbath observant and you fire him because of that, you're in big legal trouble. But in the early part of the 19th century, That wasn't the case. And Jews came here as immigrants, and they needed parnassa. Put yourself in their shoes for a second. Imagine what it was like to be coming to America. You have a family, you have a wife, you have a family, you have to support them. There wasn't welfare. People weren't giving out, you know, Social Security checks or welfare checks, or, you know, there wasn't gemachs that you could go to. You basically ate whatever you were able to earn. And if you earned money, then you ate. If you didn't earn money, then you didn't eat. And you didn't have an apartment over your head because you were evicted. It was very simple. And here you were challenged. Imagine, put yourself in the, it's, you know, sometimes we look at it like, okay, you know, but imagine if you were that person for a second. You have a wife and you have, let's say, 5, 6, 7 kids, and you go to work on Monday morning, you got a new job, come Friday afternoon and you say to your boss you want to go home for Shabbos, oh, you're one of those guys, okay. Very nice knowing you. Thanks for the 4 days of work. Here's your check, and here's a pink slip also, which means that you're fired. And Monday morning, you'll go back. You'll look for another job because we don't hire Sabbath observers here. Now, you know, we look at. Of course, I would be amazed. Is it so pashut that would be the decision that you would make? You come home Friday afternoon, and you have no job Monday morning, and you don't know what you're going to be able to do. To shop, to cook, to your kids need shoes, they need clothing. It's not a pashut thing, but people by the thousands were willing and able to be meiser nefesh to keep Shabbos and to keep Yontif and to keep Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and to do all of these things just in order to stay religious. This was a tremendous mesiras nefesh to the Rabbi Nishayim. This is also lying down in the Mizbeach for Hashem. It wasn't a death type of mesiras nefesh. It was a life mesiras nefesh. It was giving up things that we naturally need. These aren't luxuries. These are necessities, but I'm willing to somehow be able to give it up for the Rabbi Nishayim. This is a madrega that is beyond our comprehension. The schar that those people got for keeping Shabbos in spite of all of those challenges, impossible challenges, but they did it, that's the legacy of America. That's what American Jewry brought to the table of the Mizbeach. There's a beautiful story, I think it's my favorite story of all the stories, and maybe you've heard me say it, but every opportunity that I could say it, I say it because I think it's a mitzvah lefarsim. In the early years in America, in the year 1912, so there were immigrants from Eastern Europe. They came and they lived in the Lower East Side. And it was a family by the name of the Parnases, not related to Rabbi Parnas, who was a Rosh Shiva here, but a very chashuva family. He was a Hasidish Yid, and he and his wife, and I believe they had 8 children. They lived in one of these tenement buildings in Lower East Side, an apartment. And he was one of these people that I'm talking about. He got a job on Monday morning, he got fired on Friday. Got a job Monday morning, got fired on Friday. But eventually, like, you get blacklisted. Like, people know, oh, you're a Sabbath. It's clear that you're going to be Shabbos. You know, they know. All the employers started, I guess, talking to each other, and they knew exactly who to hire, who not to hire. I'm not going to train you another week and then only have you leave. So he basically ran out of options for parnasa. It's an amazing thing. You know, it's a real life crisis. And what happened was that, like I said, it was in the middle of the winter. He wasn't paying his rent. Rent in those days was $5 a month in an apartment in the Lower East Side. And he couldn't even come up with that. He tried to do odd jobs and this and that. He wasn't able to feed his family and keep a roof over his head. All because of Shabbos. So he went, the landlord rather sent the superintendent to evict him. Like, you don't pay your rent, you haven't paid for a couple of months, you're out. There's no, today you could sue and go to a court and landlords and tenants and you don't have, that didn't exist. You didn't pay the rent, goodbye, you're out. So imagine for a second, Rabbi Parnas with his wife and 8 children, and they're standing on a cold, snowy street in the Lower East Side of Manhattan without anywhere to go. They didn't have an in-law to go to, a parent to go to, a relative. They didn't know, they were immigrants. They just came. And they literally were freezing. And the landlord, the superintendent of the building, a non-Jew, and to his great credit, he said, "Listen, Rabbi, I'm not the owner of the building. I would let you stay. I'm under strict orders to evict you, but I can't stand to see you out in the street. You and your family, you're good people." He says, "If you want, you could sleep down in the basement of the building where I sleep. It's not fancy. It's very, the boiler room is down there, and the boiler was heating coal. And so the whole apartment, the whole downstairs was all like basically one big fog of black coal smoke and dust in the air. But you'll be warm, and you'll have a roof over your head. That much I could give you. I can't give you food. But I could provide you shelter, at least until you find another way of supporting yourself." Which was an amazing chesed. Anyway, so that's what they did. They took all their pekeloch, and they went down to the basement of the building, and that's where they lived. Now, a couple of days later, these chassidish kids, they came up to play ball out in the street. But they didn't look like white children. They looked like black children because they were all covered in black. They were fully black. And they were speaking Yiddish to each other. That was their language. So they're playing ball. They looked like black children playing ball, speaking Yiddish. And there was like a very aristocratic Jewish man, not religious. But you can see he wore like the American attire, very, you know, spitz. And he passed by and he notices a strange sight. And he says, like, just to nobody in particular, just to himself, he says, "Only in New York can you have black kids that speak Yiddish." I don't know. So one of the kids opened his mouth and says, "Mister," says, "we're not black. We're regular Jewish kids. That's why we're speaking Yiddish." He says, "But you're black." He says, no, we're not. So why are you black?" So he explains, "Our father Shem Shabbos, and they evicted us, they put us down in the basement, $5 we couldn't come up with." And this Yid had a good heart. And he says, "Do me a favor, ask your father to come up. I want to talk to him." It's an amazing story. This is like the most amazing story of all time. Never forget this story and repeat it to anyone that you see. So he says, so Rabbi Parnas comes up. And I guess he also looked black. And he says, "Shalom Aleichem." He says, "What's your name?" He says, "Mr. Biston." "Mr. Biston, what can I do for you?" He says, "Well, I spoke to your children. They told me this terrible story, how, you know, you were Meiser Nefesh for Shabbos. You gave up your Shabbos, and you don't have a normal house to stay in." He says, I want to buy you an apartment. I'm going to give you $500. Now, $500, then you could buy an apartment building with. $500 was like a few million dollars today. It was an astronomical amount of money. I told you, $5, you were able to live in an apartment for a month. So you can imagine what $500 did. And he said, "I want to give this to you, and I don't want you to suffer anymore. I want you and your family to live decently and get yourself a job, and now at least you'll have a roof over your head." So he says, "I appreciate the offer," says Rabbi Parnas to Mr. Biston. He says, "But tell me something. This $500 that you so generously are offering to give me, and I appreciate it, was it earned with Chil Shabbos? Were you Mechalel Shabbos to earn this money, yes or no?" He says, "Yes, I was." So he says, "Let me speak to my wife first." He had the kids call up their mother, and they huddle. He said, "Listen, he offers $500, but the reason why we're in this situation in the first place is because we want to keep Shabbos properly. We don't want to get any on Shabbos. And by taking this money, we're undoing everything what are we doing? How can we do this?" She said, 100%, to her great credit. Imagine the Maseiros Nefesh that she had to have. And so they look at Mr. Biston, "Thank you very, very much. We're going to decline your offer because, you know, we can't take money that was produced on Shabbos." So he gets furious, and he's like, there's smoke coming out of his ears, and he in a huff and a puff, he leaves them, crazy greenhorns. They came to this country, and they don't. And he goes storming into his apartment. His wife sees that he's all upset, and she says, "What's wrong?" So he says, these immigrants, a rabbi and a family, I so generously gave him offered to give him $500. They were living in a basement, in a suit-filled basement of a tenement building, and I offered, they could buy their own building if they want, and they turned me down. Well, why'd they turn you down? Listen to this one. Because I got the money with Chil Shabbos. She said, they're 100% right. She said, remember a couple of years ago, we came over to these shores, and we were Shomer Shabbos, and then we decided that it was impossible. We couldn't go on the Mizbeach of Shomer Shabbos. We weren't able to be Meiser Nefesh, and we said that someday we're going to come back, but right now we have to temporarily do what we need to do, and therefore we started, you know, being Mechal Shabbos. You opened up your business. It was successful, and they're sticking to their guns, and we never did. So shame on you. They're 1,000% right. She said, so what should I do? She said, go back to him and tell him that you're going to be Shomer Shabbos from now on and beg him to take the $500. So Mr. Biston makes a U-turn and he goes back to the Parnasses, and he says, Rabbi Parnas, my wife and I understand what you're saying and we accept, and we want to, from now on, we're going to be Shomer Shabbos, and please take the money. Please take the money. He says, no. The money was still earned on Shabbos. He says, you go back, you work now with Shmir Shabbos, you earn another $500, then I'll take it back. Then I'll take it. But this old $500, I'm not touching that money. That money, you know, give it to someone else. I'm not taking that money. He says, you go earn another $500. And that's what he did. He went back, he earned another $500. He gave it to Rabbi Parnas. Rabbi Parnas bought a building in Borough Park. He opened up the first Chassidish shtibel in Borough Park, and the first chassid in the shtibel, Mr. Biston. And the families, both of them, grew together, and there's, you know, many, many Einik Lach that are all Shomer Torah mitzvahs and Meiser Nefesh and building beautiful Torah Dika homes, but with tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. That was American Mizbeach. That's an American Mizbeach. That's a Mizbeach that we have to give up ourselves on, alive. You know, there's a sefer called Magid Meisharim that's put out by Rabbi Yosef Kara. We know he had conversations with a malach, and he called him the Magid. And we have the exact conversations, like the transcript that transpired between Rabbi Yosef Kara, the Mechaber, and the Magid. And one of the conversations was that the Malach promised, the Mechaber promised Rabbi Yosef Kara that he's going to die al Kiddush Hashem. And, you know, we would be nervous if we were told that. Rabbi Yosef Kara was actually excited. Wow, I get this chus like Rabbi Akiva, you know, Kol Yomai, I always wanted to give up b'chol lebavcha, b'chol nafshecha. But then he died, you know, a regular person's death, like whenever, however many years later, but he died on his deathbed, and he called back the Malach. He says, what happened to your promise? You told me that I was going to die al Kiddush Hashem. He says, true. I did tell you that, but you did something much bigger. You lived. You lived your life al Kiddush Hashem. It's not as big a deal to give up your life, a one-shot deal, to give up your life with Mesiras Nefesh than to live with Mesiras Nefesh every single day. And so the American Mesiras Nefesh is to give up, to be willing to give up our livelihoods, our parnasa, our everything that we need to in order to be Mekadosh Shem Shamayim Barabim. Now, like I said before, we don't have this challenge, Baruch Hashem, of Shabbos. We don't have it. Everyone, you can get a job and your job is not going to require you to be Mechal Shabbos, or it shouldn't, and if they do, like I said, there are legal ramifications for that. And so what's our Dar's challenge? We're not living in the early 1900s. We're living in 2023. And what's our Mesiras Nefesh? What's our Mizbeach? So there's a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, by Avraham Avinu with his conversations with Ephron in terms of buying the ma'ara for Sarah Imenu's burial, it says, Im yeshes nafshechem. He says to Avraham Avinu, Im yeshes nafshechem, litvar es mesi. es mescha. If you want, if you really want to, then this is what we're going to do. Es nafshechem, Rashi says, es ritzainchem. If you have a desire. Nefesh doesn't always mean your soul. Nefesh means your wants, your desires. And what the Musar Sfarim all say is that Mesiras Nefesh doesn't have to be you're giving up your soul, meaning you're giving up your life, that you're willing to be executed, Al Kiddush Hashem. But very often, the greatest form of Mesiras Nefesh is, very simply, giving up your Ritzainus. We want something. We have a taiva for something. Something looks really geschmack. Something looks very tantalizing. And we restrain ourselves from that. At that moment that we have that very difficult choice to make, should I give in to my temptation or should I not give in? Whatever the temptation is, everybody has their own temptation. I mean, a lot of people share very similar temptations, but there are people that have temptations that, you know, other people can't fathom. And if you're mashgiach long enough, you hear about people's taivas and wants and needs and, you know, that are very, very disparate, like from minakatsa ala katsa. But whatever it is that you desire, that you feel you want to do, and you need to do, and that this is what you're going crazy to do, but you know that it's not the Ratzon Hashem, and you stop yourself from doing it, at great, great difficulty. You mamish sometimes have to do crazy things in order to stop yourself. When you do that, that is the greatest form of Mesiras Nefesh. That's giving up your Nefesh, your Ratzon. When you give up something that you really want to do because of the Rabbeinu Shalom, it's a tremendous, tremendous chus for you. It's the greatest form of Mesiras Nefesh, maybe even greater in certain levels than a Mesiras Nefesh of giving up your life. This is what I'm giving up. I'm giving to you my Ratzon, my desires. I have such desires, but I'm not going to give in to them. I'm going to restrict myself. I'm going to restrain myself. And it's so hard to do. I'm going to do it. We're not able to be successful every time. And a lot of times we will give in and we will have tremendous charata. But those times that we're able to stop ourselves from doing what we want and what we think at that moment is a good idea, even though we know that it's a terrible avera, those are the moments that are the greatest form of Mesiras Nefesh. I saw an amazing vart. Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein brings it from a sefer called Taras HaKadesh. It's also brought in the Eini Yisrael, which is a series of letters from a great gadol that lived in Bnei Brak. And they both say the same thing. Listen to this yesod. It's a tremendous yesod. You know, sometimes, a lot of times in life, we're looking for skulas to have our tefillas answered. Everybody has their needs of what you want, what you need to daven for. Yesterday I went into a store. I wanted to get something to eat. So I had bought a lotto ticket. I won the lotto. I won $4. I bought like a Slurpee. It was $4.75. I said I said to the guy, it was a firm guy behind the counter. I said I should have davened a little harder. It was like a chiddush to him that you could daven to win the lottery. He says, I didn't know that. I'm going to start davening to win the lottery. You could daven for anything that you want. You need anything. You need a shidduch. You need parnasa. You need a refuah, you need a yeshua of some sort, you want to pass your final, you want to get that job, you want to get into graduate school, you daven. How do I daven? My davening is so schwach, it probably doesn't go anywhere. Oh, so I have to fly to Eretz Yisrael and get in with the gadol, have a gadol daven for me, or I have to, say shir hashirim 40 days straight. I have all these skulas. You know what the svarim that I quote, and I'm going to read to you a stipler what he says? When you are able, listen to this very well, at those moments in time that you're able to miskaber over your Yetzihara, you're about to give in to your taiva, you're a Yesiv HaTzadik, you're in that situation, and you're about to give in to your taivas, and it's so easy, and it's so tempting, and it sounds like such a great idea at the time, and you stop yourself, and you have a vayimayin moment, you just stop yourself and you don't do it, that creates in Shamayim, an Eis Ratzin, it's like a Ne'ilah. It's like a tremendous, stop yourself right then and there, take out a sitter, or don't, or just say to Rabbi Hashem, look at what I just did. I was about to do something, and I thought of you, and I stopped myself, and now give me Parnasa. And now give me a Shidduch. And now give me some Yeshua. Make me feel good about my, whatever it is that you need. There is no greater Eis Ratzin. There's no Gadol in the world that could do that for you. There's no big enough Kaisel HaMaravi that could do that for you. There's no greater Eis Ratzin. There's no Ne'ilah that's big enough than that moment in time that you're able to be Ayme Ben Yisayin. There's no way to fathom the Kiddush Shem Shamayim that you've created in the world. You stirred the entire heavens. Malachim are trembling from you at that moment. If you're able to be Meiser Nefesh and you're able to go on the same Mizbeach that Adam Rishon built, and Noach was Makrav on, and Avram was Makrav Yitzchak, and Yaakov was Makrav, and throughout history, you join hands with history from Adam till today, and you shine above them. That's your Mesiris Nefesh. It's not easy to do, and we slip up a lot, but when we're able to remember this, this is one amazing way, because who doesn't need Yeshuas? So if the Meir Malchus isn't enough for us, think about it personally. I need Yeshua right now. This is it. If I could stop myself now, I create an Eis Ratzin and Shamayim that is so beyond my ability to comprehend that all of the doors of heaven are open to me. Listen, I just saw this stipler this morning. It's in Kreina Digrisa. Kreina Digrisa is... we have three volumes. I don't know if there are more, but in Yeshiva we have three volumes. It's letters that the stipler wrote to Talmidim and to Bnei Taira and whoever needed. So this was a letter that he wrote about somebody that had a situation that he had tivus. And asking about the stipler about tivus, you know, what to do about tivus, like asking me, you know, what to do about your quantum physics final. Like, you know, you're coming to the wrong guy because I don't know anything about quantum physics. The stipler didn't know anything about tivus. And if you think that I'm editorializing, he says it himself. He says, Michtavcha higiani ze eza yamim, einene yadea beifim yucha keset evnim al midas hativa. He says, I don't really know how to work on taiva. I think what he's saying is, I don't really have taivas. I'm sorry, you're coming to the wrong guy. You know, it's above my pay grade. I don't know, you know, it's not something that I have. Saipa was learning with Kedusha and Tara for his whole life. He didn't have the taivas, the base taivas that we have. Rakzais yadu'oli, but says the stipler, this much I do know. Mitecha nisayin, from experience. Ki yiras shamayim chazaka meinas es ha'ad mikol maisa, umikol gram maisa, l'chat b'yadei nairois, kedushas nishmasa ha'chatsu mitachas kisei ha'kavod of yadei gadol ha'pagam ha'atzar. He says, if you're a from person, if you're really genuinely from, and you have yirashamayim, real yirashamayim, not just lip service yirashamayim, but you really understand that you have a mission in life, that there's a God in the world, that your neshama is special, it's holy, it's from tachas kisei ha'kavod, it was chiseled, and what's going to be if you slip up, and that this world is just a prize there. You live here a couple of years, 70 years, and you have Nitzchias ahead of you if you make it through this obstacle course properly. He says, people that live that type of life, I don't think that they should have such taivas. I don't think that's arguable, right? I think that if we find ourselves in an environment that's very from, you know, that's very nizar. You know, if you're living I'd like to believe at least that if a person grew up in Bnei Brak, he has a much harder time to do any averis than if you grew up, you know, anywhere outside of Bnei Brak. Just because there's such, you know, you have gedolim and you have tzaddikim and you have kedusha and you have all yidden like working and running to buy the lulav and esrog and putting in talis and tefillin and basikin and chatzais minyanim, and they're like, you know, it's hard, I would imagine. I'd like to believe that if you're in a really, really, really holy environment, it makes it very hard to be like, this is what this type was saying. You're getting a pleasure of a momentary pleasure of tumah We know what's going to happen. You're given to that pleasure, a momentary pleasure, and the next day you wake up and you have this cloud of depression over you and you feel like you're not a ben taira and you're disgusting and Abishta hates me now. And it's all not true, but that's what you feel like. You just feel disgusting. And he says, what? So if you're a person that's a thinking person, I think that should be the poison pill to avoid any taivas, giving in to any taivas. This is what he says. But listen to what I wanted to focus on, the positive. V'tzarech ladas, ki b'skabra el ha-taiv l'shem shemayim. If you are able to muster the strength and the power to overcome your taiva, l'shem shemayim, miskadesh ma'ayd ma'ayd shem shemayim, you have created a tremendous kiddush Hashem. V'avayda k'daysha l'shma mamish. And this is the greatest form of Avaida Kedaisha. This is the holiest endeavor that you could ever engage in. V'zeichen al yedeze l'siyata d'shmaya nifla'a. And through doing this, you will be zeicha to unbelievable, unparalleled siyata d'shmaya, heavenly help. B'chol ha'anyanim, with whatever you need. Now's the time to daven, if you're able to be miskaber at that moment. Hein b'hatzlochas hatayra, hein b'tikun kol amidas. You want to be matzliachim? I'm sorry, I missed that. I forgot. I was so busy with money, and I was so busy with getting into medical school and getting into graduate school and those types of and getting shidduchim. All those are very important, but I forgot the stipler on the top of his list was being matzliach in learning. You want to have hatzlocha in learning? You want to be able to shteig and really chap what Taisa is saying, what Kiveger is asking, and what the Marsha is trying to convey, and it's not going in, and you never have that clarity? Well, here's your opportunity. At that moment, the Yer Miskaber, you dive into the Rebbeinu Shem to have atzlocha in Taira. How about those midas that you know that you're not able to ever really vanquish, those bad midas? You have terrible kas, you have terrible kinna, you have terrible gaiva. What about those midas? You want to have simcha in life, you want to have anava in life, you want to have your shemaim in life. Where do you get that from? Here's the chance that you have that you were never able to succeed. This is the shasagar, this is your window of opportunity. Vein binyan olam hazeh, or in olam hazeh dika matters. He does say in brackets, rak tzarech savlonus. I mean, don't expect, okay, last night I did this, I was able to miskaber, and so this morning I'm going to buy a lottery ticket and I better win. Doesn't work that way. He says you have to have patience with the Rebbeinu Shem. Don't expect everything to be chick-chock, but if you're given enough time and in a slow boil, you'll be able to be matzliach in your learning, you'll be able to be matzliach in business, you'll be able to matzliach with midais, with Yerushalayim. Everything is going to go eventually. Mitzvah Hashem Shiduchim. You're not going to wake up and there's going to, you know, the shadchan's automatically going to call the next morning. But give it time and give it patience, and everything should fall into place. This is stipler's aftalk. This is money in the bank. As far as I'm concerned, if the stipler says this, it's Torah Misinai. It's money in the bank. This is not questionable. This is reality. And then he says something else that's very practical. V'tzarech ladaski b'chol pam sha'ayme b'nisayin. Every time that a person withstands that nisayin, mekel al yedezes l'nisayin al lahaba. It's counterintuitive. Because when a person sometimes thinks, you know, I'm going to give into this taiva, and then I'm going to be good. Once I give in tonight to the taiva, then I'm going to be good for a couple of months. It's going to be a great summer. No. It's the opposite. He says, if you're miskaber over it, then it's going to be much easier. It's going to be much easier to overcome it tomorrow night and the night after. As Chazal say in Sanhedrin Kuf Zayin, that mar'iva is saveya. If you starve it, it's full. If you feed it, it's even hungrier. That's the way it works with taivas. You give in once, it's going to go again and again and again. If you stop yourself, then you'll be stronger and you'll be able to be much, it'll be a much easier challenge next time the Yetzirah comes. That's the way it works. The summer is a very, very difficult nisayan. Now, if you're learning in the kailol, if you're learning in a beis medrash, wherever it is, and you're doing that a whole day, and you're not coming up for air, you're not going outside in the street at all, and you're then this shmuz is, you know, it's still for you, but it's not as urgent. But if you're doing some internships or your externships or you're getting a job or you're going, you know, whatever it is, it's a very, or even if you're not doing anything, you're just staying at home holding the couch down the whole summer, it's a very, very difficult time of year. And we all know this, Mipian Yisayin. We know that it's the hardest time of year. It's the hardest time of year. We don't have the miskaret of the yeshiva. We don't have the sidrei yeshiva. We don't have our abeim with us. We don't have our chavrusas with us. We don't have our chever with us. We're basically, you know, just flapping in the wind. And the Yetzer Hara loves the summer because things are so easy in the summer. It's so easy to slip up. And there's so many excuses. And it's so difficult on so many levels. And I feel that, you know, this shmuz is important if it even like saves us from a little bit of that. And we have to really try very hard as we're entering the summer to try to find ways to be miskaber over these things. And the Mesiris Nefesh that it takes in the summer is very great. It's a great challenge for every Jewish boy and Jewish girl, an older person and really older person and young. It's across the board challenging. Everybody. Rabbeim and Balabatim and this and that. Kailoga, everybody. It's a challenge. But you should know, and I should know, that when we're able to really rise to the occasion and not give in and be strong, that's when the summer will be the most geschmack. It's not like, I want to do it. I'm going to chill. It's summer. Then I'm going here. I'm going to watch that. This is my chill. This is my time to chill. There is a lot of ways to chill in a kosher way. But chilling in a way that's not kosher is not a chill. It's depressing. It's the neshama is dying inside when that happens. It's not enjoying it. It's not enjoying the experience. It's mag'il. It's disgusting for it. The neshama inside of you is tahirahi. It's pure. It just wants purity. It just wants nice. It just wants easy. It just wants tahira. That's what it craves. It wants you to learn a little bit. It wants you to daven a little bit. It wants you to be nice to people. It wants you just to spread goodness. And when we don't, and when we engage in the forces of tumma, and we think this is going to be geschmack. I want to do it. It's the biggest trap. And it could bring you down further than you even know. And I've said many times, you know, stories about Talmidim that within a week or two of the summer, they went me'igur ram l'bira mikta, from a high, high plateau in terms of learning to the lowest, lowest depths. And I don't want to discuss it again because I get depressed every time I say the story. But just suffice it to say that it's the fall, the slip is very, very slippery. It's a very slippery, slope this summer. And as much as you think you learned the whole year and you're stark and now you're bulletproof, baloney. You're not bulletproof to anything. Everybody is susceptible and you could slip so far and so fast that you won't even realize it until after it's all over. And you look in the mirror and you say, like, what happened to me over the summer? So we have to work on being a shalshalas of the Mesira of Mesiris Nefesh. Baruch Hashem, we are not challenged with a Mesiris Nefesh of either do this Aveira or I will kill you. But we have the tremendous Mesiris Nefesh of the Yetzer Hara telling you that if you do this Aveira, you'll have it so good. And that's a very, very difficult Mesiris Nefesh because that it sounds good. It sounds like it makes a lot of sense. And I want it. Sounds like you know, unbelievable, this concept of giving in and like enjoying, but it's not enjoyment, it's terrible. But you don't realize it until afterwards. So the carrot, the way that you could and that we could be misgaber I'm not saying practical etzes, but I'm just saying, just as the greatest reward that you should understand, that we should understand, that when we're aymed, when we're about to give in to that tie, when we did slip and we got to a moment that we're holding by should I or shouldn't I, should I or shouldn't I, v'atis b'seyu b'bigdo, we have the etzara grabbing onto our coat and saying shechva imi, and we have that choice to make yes or no, and we think, as Yosef did, he saw the d'mustiyukne shel aviv, he saw Yaakovina's face in the window, and it stopped him. We don't always have Yaakovina's face, but we have the stipler's face. We have the Taras HaKadosh's face. We have the Eini Yisrael's face that are telling us, stop. And if you stop now, and if you don't give in to your taiva, then you could ask the Rabbeinu Shalom anything that you need, anything that you want, will be yours for the asking. It's a ne'ilah for you. It's a shas rotzen. It's an ace rotzen that is unparalleled in your life. You will never get such an ace rotzen. You can't go to anyone to buy this ace rotzen. And by the way, this doesn't mean that, I'm not suggesting that a person should put himself into a nisayon to get this ace rotzen. If you avoid the ace rotzen before it's a nisayon to you, that's even better. Meaning if you make precautions for yourself that you're not even going to be tempted, that you could daven then also. You don't have to like, okay, so, when I'm in that situation, then I'll, no. It's an ace ratzon now. If you're able to like, to make decisions today that will limit your exposure to taivas, that will make you go away from all these things, daven now. If you're able to now be miskaber and say, okay, instead of going to, I'm not going to go to that co-ed college this summer. I'm not going to do this type of thing. I'm not going to, look at that, magazine when I get home. I'm not going to have unfiltered. If whatever you're able to do now, that's a tremendous ace ratzon also. Because this is now your ace ratzon, right? This is the moment to be Ayin B'ni Sayin. When you're making the decision now, that's also tremendous. You don't have to mamish go into the lion's den to get this. I don't think that's what the Svarim HaKadoshim are saying. So this is something to really keep in the front burner of our brains as we go into the summer. Summer is I don't want to paint it as a bad time of year. It's a beautiful time of year. It's a time that you can relax. You can spend with your family, spend with your friends. You could you deserve relaxation a little bit. You worked so hard throughout the whole year. But the more that you do in terms of Kedusha, the better your summer will be. Period. If you wake up late and you miss davening every day, you're not going to enjoy that day of the summer. You're going to feel like, ugh. If you wake up at a good time and you're not at the 9:30 minyan, you wake up at a normal minyan and you daven and you learn and you eat a nice breakfast, then you do what you need to do, but you do it with the Rabbeinu Shalom at every step of the way, now you've already earned your ability to have an amazing summer. Because you're showing that you're willing to be meiser nefesh on the Rabbeinu Shalom's Mizbeach. This is your Kairos Kesef. This is your Adam Harishon. This is your Nayach. This is your Mesira. That I'm willing to do with, in my life, my portion of Mesiris Nefesh, my portion of being makir myself on the Mizbeach. What's my Mesiris Nefesh? My Mesiris Nefesh is Mesiris HaRatzim. The ritzinus that I have, my taibas, and specifically my taibas in the summer, when things are really difficult, we stop and we really analyze now how we're going to avoid them. And if chas v'shalom we fall into the trap and we're almost about to do it, double down and try to really stop yourself. And when you do, daven, because that is a tremendous, you've created for yourself an ace ratzon that's unparalleled. Just like to end with a bracha, complete Birkas Hedget. I'm in awe. I'm really, literally in awe of every single one of you. I've been to a lot of yeshivas in my life. I've been around the block many, many times to really good yeshivas. And that's not a flex, but I've been to the finest of yeshivas, Baruch Hashem. And the best guys in that yeshiva doesn't hold a candle to anyone in this room. You're able to do so much good and be meiser nefesh with all of the difficulties and all the challenges of the world around you and technology, and you're able to grapple with it and still be able to be here learning Shtark on the last day of the summer as well, when many people already peeled away, you know, weeks ago already, and you're still here. That's an awe, an awesome maimed. It's an awesome, it's great. It's really great. You don't know. If I could give each and every one of you a personal yesher kayach, but communally, this is it. We're so proud of you that you're here in yeshiva still, and that you've been shtark the entire zman, and you've given yourselves so amazingly to yeshiva. And we just hope and pray that your summer will go smoothly, Mitz Hashem, and that if you're not coming back to yeshiva, that you still come back to visit. And that if you do come back to yeshiva next month, Mitz Hashem, and we hope that all of you do, that you come back with new kaiches and with new resolve to make yeshiva the most amazing yeshiva that it could be, to give everything that you can to the yeshiva, to come on Shabbos, to come on Yantiv, to come to the Shmuzim. We need chizuk. We always need chizuk, but we especially need chizuk as we're going into a new year, a new zman. And we need every single person, all hands on deck. We need everybody to come and give it your all. Come, be prepared to be meiser nefesh to the yeshiva. In a good way. Not in a tarot, not in a hard, but to be able to be selfless, dedicated to whatever yeshiva needs. And there's so many needs that yeshiva has, but mostly just to be here and to be a positive force and to just want to be a part of yeshiva. And you all are. You're already doing that, but just continue to do it and bring more guys into the chevros. So that next year, hopefully, we'll have 3 times the amount of guys of the last day of this month. And we love you, and we're very proud of you. We want to wish you a beautiful summer, and please stay in touch. And Mirtz Hashem, you should all be zeichet to be matzliach in learning this summer, and your shemayim this summer, and beruchnius, begashmius, bechal mili demetav. You should have atzlacha and bracha. Thank you.